We'll do that one more time. Toronto, how you feeling? Looking forward to this next half an hour, next hour, as you guys will get a chance to answer some questions alongside Max. We're looking forward to this panel. But before we introduce the headliners of the show, Max, how you feeling?
This is the first time for me. I'm actually, this is way more nerve-wracking than any Arkell show. So be easy on me, please.
The last time you were on stage with head coach Nick Nurse of the Toronto Raptors and obviously head coach of Team Canada now, I was kind of disappointed in Max because I was trying to get Coach Nurse to come to the live podcast that we were doing for the Raptors World Championship celebration, and he didn't show up because he popped up on your stage playing the guitar.
This is true, but I'll tell you, I was pissed off at Blake Murphy because I put him on the guest list for the Arkell show, and he was at your event.
All right, good trade. No, I like your trade better, though. Without further ado, guys, if you are excited for Team Canada basketball, start giving me a round of applause because I'm going to introduce the three people who are chiefly responsible for their run in the FIBA World Cup. NBA world champion head coach and hopefully a gold medal head coach as well, Nick Nurse. General Manager Roran Barrett and President Glenn Grunwald. So these are the architects of Team Canada's hopeful run to qualifying, if not a gold medal, as we approach the FIBA World Cup. The big headline today that came out was the absence of some of the players who won't be there participating. But I think you guys have gotten to the point where you're just excited to finally start playing. And from a coaching standpoint, from a game plan standpoint, knowing what you want to do on the court with the team that's available to you. Coach.
Is that a question?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think for me it hasn't entered my mind much at all today in the two practices about who isn't here. I'm focused on who is and what they look like and what they can do. And we had two amazing practices today. They were fast-paced and energetic and played hard, and they absorbed things super quickly. Like, felt like we were on about day four or five today. Those guys were picking up things so good. So it's going to have to be a collective effort. But that's okay. That's what basketball is, a collective effort at both ends of the floor. And like you said, I'm excited about it. I am exhilarated to have this job and very honored to be doing this.
Yeah, so when you get the job, you go on vacation in the Cayman Islands.
Yes.
You're on the beach. And how do you prepare in your mind? Like, what are the conversations you're having with the staff? Are you watching any game tape from the players that you're not familiar with? Describe the process of taking over a roster that you're not as familiar with.
So I had this elaborate plan in the Caymans that I was going to get a lot of time on the beach and film, you know, watching, right? I took my wife. I've got a 2.5-year-old son and a 2-month-old son, and we actually brought my wife's mother along, so we were going to have, you know, some date nights and film study, you mentioned, and all kinds of stuff. And we get there on a Sunday night, and Monday morning, mother-in-law is grinning ear to ear. She's sitting on the beach. She's walking up and down. She's having the time of her life. Beautiful white sand, beautiful water. And she comes into the house and slips and falls and dislocates her patella.
No.
So we had to take her to the hospital, spent that whole day, and then I was babysitting a 2-month-old, a 2-year-old, and a mother-in-law for the next 6 days, so my film watching got cut into a little bit. Is there a question you asked in there somewhere?
Cayman Islands aside, how do you get kind of caught up to speed, I guess, with the program?
The good thing, Max, is I've touched most of these guys at some point in my coaching career. We've had a lot of the guys in summer league. We've had a lot of them in training camp, 905. A couple of them have played for the Raptors, and then I've coached against, you know, the Olynyks of the world and some of those guys. You know, there's only a handful of guys that I came in today that I didn't know too much about, and those guys were great. They were great today, so I was excited that the guys that I didn't know were full of youthful enthusiasm and had a little game to go along with it.
Glenn, as you got to watch the team today as they started training camp, you got to see how they looked on the court. What expectations did you start to think about the performance that they could have going to this World Cup after watching them today?
Well, I was very pleased. I thought Nick and his staff did a great job putting in a lot of the offense and some of the defensive principles. So, and there was a group that really picked up things very quickly, it seemed to me. I don't know, Nick, if you thought that too. So it was exciting to see. And then I was also excited to see the culture and the camaraderie of these guys because, you know, we talk about some of the NBA players that didn't come, but these are the guys that sacrificed and did the work and got us qualified for the World Cup. And it's great that they get to finish the job now because some of them might not have been on the team had a lot of these NBA guys showed up. So I think the passion they have for our country and for our national team, I think that's as important as anything in terms of going out there and competing.
And you spoke about the guy, the camaraderie that was there. Rowan, your son was there, and you could tell when he did his press availability, he was itching to play. First of all, if there's a roster spot open, would you want to suit up one more time for Team Canada?
You look good, man.
In the corner, man. I'll take that shot every time. No, my days are over. My days are over. It's for the young guys now. And, you know, thankfully we have, you know, enough players in our country always to field a competitive team.
I imagine that you're somewhat encouraged to see that your son was still wanting to be there. And obviously as a parent, it must be an inspiring moment to even see your son in that, have that opportunity and, you know, be so good that potentially his absence might be felt. But I know you're still with him throughout this whole process.
Absolutely. I mean, he's a young player. You know, he loves his country. He plays every summer. He always wants to play any chance he can. And no different this year, obviously, with an ailment that's going to hold him back. But definitely it's a prideful thing, right? You know, he grew up seeing my jersey on the wall. And, you know, no matter what he's done, you know, I'm always telling him, you know, you haven't been to the Olympics. You know, you haven't been to a world championship, you know, at the men's level. And so, you know, those are goals for him, you know, for sure. And, you know, I'm happy that our country looks at him in that way. But at the end of the day, he's still young. He's got to come out and prove himself. You know, this is now a man's game, right? He's a young boy, and, you know, he's got to find his way, just like all the rest of us, our players have.
Yeah, I think as basketball fans, you know, if you're on the Reddit boards and you're following Twitter, you're hearing about the influence when it comes to international basketball of the players' agents and the various pro clubs that you're dealing with. Like, can you talk about that kind of push and pull when it comes to assembling the roster and if there's a way to sort of, you know, get the most out of those relationships as we build the program? And yeah, you're so kind of on both sides of it right now, too.
You're encapsulating a lot of my job in that question. You know, we created something some years ago called an athlete sphere, where, you know, we put the athlete in the middle, and you put kind of all the people that are around the athlete that are going to be speaking into him. And whether it's the NBA, you know, the NBA team, you know, the agent, his girlfriend, his AAU club, right? And on and on and on and on and on and on. And, you know, part of the job is to try to touch each of all of these people somehow and try to get everybody somehow moving in the same direction to really help the athlete to see the clear path towards the national team. And, you know, we've been able to do that quite successfully at times, and then other times, you know, life happens. And so it is a part of it. I think it's a part of it all over the world, right? Where, you know, I think the USA got a good chance to see that here. I think everybody can see that. All the different countries, even in our own pool, players pulling out. And so it's never going to be a perfect
Just tell us
science.
Which agent is a pain in the ass.
Where do I start? No, you know what? Look, it's just something you have to manage. It's a part of it, right? It's a part of it. And, you know, the reality is there's a competing thing there, right? The athlete's job, the agent's job is to make sure that they make the most money for the athlete, right? And put them, hopefully for them, in the best position. Quite often the national team does not fit into that, right? And so it's really trying to make sure we have that conversation with the agent to show them how both things can be accomplished. And sometimes it works. And, you know, quite honestly, sometimes it doesn't.
Glenn, as you help bring Coach Nurse onto this coaching staff, to lead this coaching staff, what did you envision in terms of how the team would play? And what do you want the fans here and the fans that are watching across the country to feel like when they watch a Team Canada basketball game in this World Cup?
Well, hopefully they see the passion and the teamwork and the commitment to each other. You know, my old college coach, Bobby Knight, always used to say, the mental is to the physical as 3 is to 1. So we're going to have to really play well. We have to play smart. We'll have to be well prepared. And like I said earlier, that we've got some systems that are flexible and also, you know, allows the player some freedom to interpret and do what's right. And I think, like I said, the players picked it up. So I think the pace of play that you'll see, if they listen to Coach Nurse, will be a fun style to watch and a very exciting way to play basketball. And I think they'll enjoy playing that way, too. So hopefully you'll see the joy, the passion, and the commitment to each other.
Coach, have you had any conversations with, let's say, a Kyle Lowry who's playing for Team USA, a Jonas Valančiūnas who's playing for Lithuania? Any comments that you've had with them so far as you get ready for this tournament?
No, not really. I mean, other than that, we're going to play them, right? We play USA in Sydney and told Kyle we're looking forward to it. And again, and Jonas as well, we got him in game 2. And, you know, I was really close with Jonas. The one good thing about us playing Lithuania is I've seen them play every summer for about the last 4 or 5, so I know that team pretty well. Played against them in the Olympics and stuff, too, back in 2012, so I've been against them a lot. Kyle, just quickly on Kyle, right, I think that it's we're talking about these players that want to play and don't want to play. This guy's a 5-time All-Star and a NBA champion and a gold medal World Cup and a gold medal Olympian, and he just had surgery on his thumb and he's still going, right? I mean, that's big time. A guy that loves that situation, loves to hoop, and you guys know him. You've seen him play. When he gets out there, he's going to be diving all over the place and taking charges and, you know, doing everything he can to get his team revved up to play. So give him a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, I love hearing the treat for me and getting to hang out with you folks is that you get to hear these origin stories. And Nick, you talked about how you've touched a lot of the guys in some way or another. What's the history with you and Glenn and Canada? And yeah, talk to us about how you got to here.
Okay, well, this isn't a widely talked about thing, but when I was coaching a long time ago, I coached in England for a long time.
BBL. Right?
Yeah, the British Basketball League. And my season would end usually in late April or May, and there was a number of years, there was a guy working for Glenn who was a head of international scouting named Jim Kelly. And he coached in England a long time ago, too, and we kind of, you know, he coached in Germany and the Philippines. He was kind of like me. They'd give you a job anywhere, we'd take it type of thing. But anyway, I used to swing back through Toronto a lot.
What year?
I don't know, in the 90s, mid-90s, I would say.
Late
90s. And I'd swing back through Toronto, and they'd be getting ready for summer league and have their free agents in, and I'd just be out on the floor reffing games or keeping stats or whatever, just to be around and involved.
You had some opinions.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I wasn't here to say that very quietly.
And I was looking at the guys they were going to cut, you know, maybe for my team in England or whatever. I was doing it totally for free, but pretty much. Got me a hotel, stayed at the Westin, would walk over. It was good. And all, for me to be around an NBA team at that point in my life was like, you know, I tell everybody, man, I'm in Toronto, I'm with the Raptors, you know, and it was great. And I remember always kind of tucking that into my head, how great it was. I loved coming here in the summertime, and I was like, man, if I ever get a chance to go to Toronto and coach, it's going to be great. I'm going to take it. And lo and behold, look what happened, man. Seriously.
Now you're doing this.
That's awesome. S- speaking of coaches, Glenn, I want you to elaborate on the rest of the coaching staff. When Sherman Hamilton and Doug Smith were up here earlier, they said this is one of the best coaching staffs that Team Canada has had outside of just Coach Nurse as well. And after you do that, I'd love to play a video that Nick Nurse, coach, would like to see from one of your former coaches as well. But before we do that, Glenn, can you kind of let us know about the coaching staff in general, how you put it together, and what your thoughts on what their capabilities are? Or Rowan
Probably
as
better
well.
For Rowan to answer that question, because
I think that you're always looking around the world to try to understand who's in the coaching pool that you can go out and get. But this was a very collaborative process, with all of us. And, you need to have a lot of input from Nick, right? Nick's the one that's going to have to be there managing them. He's the one that's going to be in the trenches with them. And so, we had Gordon Herbert, to a stalwart for Canada, was an Olympian for Canada, and coached, for Canada through the years. And was one of the coaches to help us get actually to qualify to the World Cup, and really knew those European guys, the guys that are playing in Europe, that we're going to probably be on this team, as well as many of the teams we're going to play against. And so, we thought that was going to be a good fit for us. And then again, kind of working all the way down the staff. When you have another championship level coach on the staff like Bjork Glenn as well, that can only help. Him coming in, as well. And then with Greenberg, Brad Greenberg, extensive experience kind of at all levels of the game, whether it was the NCAA or it's in Europe or even in the NBA, and even on the management side in the NBA, we felt, wow, if we can put all of this together, this could be tremendous. Not only a great mix of NBA experience, right, that would be great for our NBA guys and all that, and the NBA players we'll play against, but also having a really strong international mix within our team as well, that knows FIBA, that can drive in FIBA. Like, you cannot sit down in a FIBA game and coach it. Like, you're up on top of the game all game, gesticulating with the best of them, right, with the referees. Like, you're gonna have that, right? Yes.
I'll use that one for a few years.
Right. So we're just trying to look for all of those kinds of things, and then at the end also, what coaches would possibly fit our players the best? I think that was, very, very important. And I think Nick already spoke to the fact that he knew many of those players. And the ones that he didn't know, Gordon Herbert was going to know. And so we figured all together, it would be really, really good. And I thought today, as Glenn said, it started out really, really well.
So with that being said, there is one former coach that you've worked with that wants to send a message to you, Coach Nurse. And it'll be on the screen behind us, or yes, you could see it behind us.
Nick Nurse, AKA Double N, Phil Handy, your man. Hey, I just wanted to wish you and the team, man, much success. Team Canada, I think if there's anybody on this planet that can help this team go to the next level and have some success in the World Cup, it is definitely you, my man. So just wanted to reach out, send some love, and I'm looking forward to watching you guys do some big things in China.
Video quality on it was a little shaky. I think Phil's actually in China when he sent that to us.
Phil played for me. He played for me on 2000, maybe 1999, Manchester Giants team in England. He was a hell of a player. It was about, 20 years ago, and I don't know, 60 pounds ago, maybe. Sorry, Phil.
This is being recorded, so I'll send it to him.
It's all right. He knows. I say that to him about once a week. He's a great coach, as you guys know. He's like way up there in the player development side of things. He left us, as you know, to go to the front of the bench for the Lakers. So great step up for him, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get these guys moving on and chasing their own dreams a little bit, right?
So in the last panel, Sherman Hamilton was talking about the relationship he had with you and the guys that he came up with, and you're playing basketball every summer together. And by the way, I googled 47 years old, Sherman Hamilton. That's insane to me. He looks amazing. So my question is,
he can play too.
Sorry?
He can still play too.
I bet. I'm sure. I know a big part of sort of the success of Canada basketball is the ability of these young Canadian high school kids to go to prep schools in America and to shine there. And I wondered, does that take away anything from the relationship to building Team Canada culture? Is there anything to that? And if you think there might be something, how do we go about sort of making sure they feel connected to, you know, the guys their age and their cohort and feel connected to the program?
It's a great question. I think that there was a time when that did happen. Sometimes a kid left here at 15 years old and we didn't see him until he was starring on the NCAA stage, you know? It's very difficult to start building a relationship at that point. You know, what we have seen, one, is that basketball in our country has grown tremendously, and now we have very, very strong leagues here. All of our, there isn't a mass exodus now. The majority of our kids do not need to leave. They can accomplish their goals right here at home. So I think that that's great. Yeah, it's great for our game, right? It's great for our game. And then, you know, the second thing is, to your point, we identified that. And so back in 2012, one of the things that we did is we started a junior academy. And so we find these kids when they're 11, 12, 13 years old, 7th and 8th grade, and we pull them away from their parents for a weekend, and we get them in training best on best, right? And so we are now a part of their development. We're a part of their growth, right?
And so they have those relationships with those other kids
absolutely.
That they played against when they're 12 years old.
Absolutely, right? And so by the time they get to the U16 team or the U17 or U18, they're recruiting each other now. Right? Like, what do you mean you're not coming? What do you mean? We've been dreaming about this since we were 12, right? They start to recruit even one another. And then I think another part that Canada basketball has been great at is giving us a budget, you know, so that we can actually get out there and recruit, build those relationships, because there still will be kids that do go down to the States. And so we're down there. We're in their school environment. We're with their coaches. We're looking at them face to face and trying to figure out what those kids need and try to figure out how we can help them. So we really try to surround them. You know, I can think about, you know, some of the players that we've had through the years. Sometimes I was the only one from Canada in the arena to support the kid, you know, in the tunnel, in the bowels of the arena, right? You know, he's scared, he doesn't know what he's going on. You know, Canada basketball's there, right, to support them, to usher them through. Sometimes you're helping them with media, right? Sometimes they're scared, they don't want to go back out. You're there, you're helping them, you're supporting them, you're growing. And when it comes time to come back to the national team.
They'll remember those things, yeah.
They usually remember those things because it's authentic. It's real support and service for the kids.
Max, as you mentioned, the team is trying to cultivate a culture that will continue throughout however long, you know, Team Canada will continue to play basketball, especially here in the World Cup. Team is going to go to Australia, and then they're going to go to China. I know you wanted to relay some advice for Coach Nurse as they take these long voyages.
This is your idea.
I don't.
He just wanted to know what songs you're going to be singing to them on the long plane ride.
Well,
are you bringing your guitar?
You know, 100%. It was part of the deal. I said, I'm not
contract,
taking the job,
right?
Unless I get to bring the
it's
guitar.
It's in the contract.
It's in the contract.
There's a guitar provision in there.
It's in there.
Yeah,
it's in there. Either. Hopefully I'll be able to play it when I get back.
What are you most excited about as you guys do travel? Is there anything that you will take the team to do that's not? Obviously, everything's going to be basketball related, but are there certain, obviously, there's a whole thing. There's a bunch of activities you could do outside of just playing the sport of basketball. And as you guys answer that question, there is another video that I wanted to show you, Coach Nurse. As you travel throughout the world, and you play these games, I imagine you'll go through a series of emotions. But first, please let us know what you plan to do outside of the basketball-related activities while you guys take these travels around the world.
You know, I think that, you know, before even getting to activities, I think the best times that you can remember playing is traveling with each other, you know? The long plane rides, the time in the, you know what I mean, in the airport while you're waiting for the next, you know, the next flight. You know, those are the times that you remember, you know, just being with each other. And sometimes the difficulty of it, you know, is something that you laugh your way through. It's almost like a badge of honor that we got through that. It's something that really pulls you together. There's nothing like a group, you know, going on a trip like that together, coming together. It's why coaches always, they want to take their guys away from the city that they're in, right, so they can group them together and do that. I think you feel that on the national team as well. I think sometimes it's hard just to kind of plan out something, you know. Sometimes, you know, the coach, you know, he's got to feel it. He's got to feel his team. And, you know, as you go along, we just try to make sure that we have enough money budgeted so that when Nick says, hey, I want to take my team here, I want to do this with them, right, we're forthcoming with the ability to help him to do that.
The Greg Popovich wine budget? Is it in there, Glenn?
That's a question for Glenn.
Yeah. No, well, we don't.
Drop $10,000 on a bottle of wine.
Well, there's these new wines that come in cans that I think are supposed to be really good. So, yeah, I think we might have some of those.
Coach, as you take this team on this journey, you're going to go through a wave of emotions. I know everybody who's watching on CBT Sports and here tonight can remember some of the wave of emotions that you expressed throughout a very fun NBA title run. So I think we'll reflect on that for a quick moment, as I'm sure we'll probably see new iterations of that coming up in the next coming weeks or so.
Okay.
I think it'll be coming up
quick.
Behind us. I think it's coming up behind us, like the performer video. There we go. Do you remember what happened in this one right here, Coach Nurse?
That's pretty good for your FIBA, don't you think? No, that's a good FIBA one. I'll take that with me. Is that it?
I think there was more. Oh, there we go.
There we go.
That's a good one.
That one I remember. I can't forget that one.
It was a block charge.
3 second call. 3 second call on Fred dribbling around in the lane. Everybody.
This one?
Looks like all the same game.
Same ref.
He looks like he's ready for FIBA.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
now we're talking. Now we're talking. Soft hands. Same game.
Yeah, same. I think that'll conclude that. But with your experience, though, in international basketball, Coach Nurse, you're going to have to deal with a lot of rules that aren't obviously in the NBA. How do you plan to manage that, as refereeing is going to be different in this setting?
Well, one of the things that is different is the refereeing crews are from all over the world, and most of them, they probably speak English, but most of them pretend that they don't. So there's not a whole lot of dialogue going on back and forth. So you learn that pretty quick, and you can save a lot of words. And that's why the actions become a little bit more demonstrative, a little bit. I don't know, what was the other question?
I think that was pretty
much
it.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly, you know, changes in the game. 40 minutes, more physicality, a lot more holding, grabbing, legal screens. Teams really make you pay for mistakes. You turn it over, and they're usually paying for a three ball at the other end. So there's premium on controlling the basketball. But mostly is what I've seen in national team play is these guys are here, and they're playing their guts out for their countries. And, man, you better be ready to play your guts out right along with them.
Before we go to some questions in the audience, for you two guys here in the middle, what are your impressions of the pool that Canada's in? Obviously, it's going to be Australia, Lithuania, and Senegal. What are your impressions of the teams and the challenge that you face in that pool?
I think it's a strong pool, a very strong pool. And I think that, you know, it's one of the reasons why you want to go out and get, you know, the type of coaches that we were able to bring in, right? Because it's, you know, a part of it obviously is the talent that you have, but another part of it is how are you going to dissect the other team? You know, that what are you going to take away from them? Right, you know, how are you going to accentuate what you do well and hide what you don't do well, you know, and all those kinds of things. So, you know, I think our first focus right now is not as much on them. I think our first focus right now is on us, right, and how we're going to build what we do to pack the strongest punch, right, and you know, we're going to have to play against them, but they're going to have to play against us, you know, as well, right. So I think that's our focus now, and we've got all this stuff on the other teams, and we'll be getting into that more and more as we go along.
All right, I think we're going to open up some questions here in the audience. Sammy's down here on, right here with the microphone. So if you have a question, feel free to say your name and give us your question.
Thank you. Good evening, gentlemen. First off, thank you so much for representing our country and helping us win a chip. My name is Chrissy. My question is, I know recently Coach Nurse, you visited Bill Belichick and the Patriots, and I also saw that a lot of your plays are named after CFL teams, and that you like to go to the stadium and watch those games, and you're really inspired by that. So my question is, what are some other sources of inspiration that you have from outside of sports and outside of basketball in particular that you incorporate into your coaching style and your leadership style?
Okay, most of those have been probably documented a little bit, but there's a couple things, like the guitar thing's funny and all that kind of stuff, but I'm learning both guitar and the piano on purpose a little bit, because I really think that being creative in this day and age is something you got to be in coaching, right? I just don't want to go out there and do the same things. That's why you've probably saw some things you didn't see this year, like the Boxing One Revival Tour, right? I'm going to get some t-shirts, 2019 Boxing One Revival Tour.
You showed them.
So I think that, and I could be like, I could be making this up, right? But I believe it, so it works for me, that studying the music for me opens up a creative side of me, and things come to me when I least expect them, or I don't know where they come from. I'll give you a really personal example. We were the night before game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. I was in the hospital having a little baby boy, and I was asleep, dead asleep on the most uncomfortable recliner in the world, dead asleep, and snapped out of it at 4 a.m. and said, they're going to put Lopez on Siakam tomorrow. And I was like, where the hell did that come from? And it was, they did. They came out and they started and they moved Lopez to Siakam. So I'm giving that credit to the music, right? My mind's open and it's receptive to stuff. And then I go just cross all sports. I love football. The Belichick, I went to watch the Patriots practice the other day, and Belichick was unbelievably giving of his time and insightful. Really, some really amazingly cool things they were doing. But my biggest takeaway from the thing was, no surprise, was Tom Brady. He comes down first for practice. He practices his butt off. He does every rep. It's July, middle of July. He's 42 years old. He's coaching every guy on the field. He's running every play. He turned his back for 2 seconds because something was wrong with his hands, and some guy intercepted a pass from the backup quarterback, and you know, there's like 10,000 fans there watching too. Place goes crazy. He turned around like he just missed the biggest play of the year, you know, in a 100th play of practice in July. And it was just so in tune, acting like if he didn't have a good day that day, they had no chance of winning the Super Bowl this year. And that was just transcending all over the field. And I got on a plane right from practice, flew to L.A. We had 16 of our players in L.A. for workouts. The first thing I told them was, I know we're in L.A. and it's late July, and we don't play for real till April, May, or June. Today, we're taking a step forward. I gave the same little speech to the Canadian guys today. I need, you know, tonight, this is our second practice. It's really hot in the gym today. I don't know if something's wrong, but really hot. And I said, I need 75 minutes of supreme concentration from you. That's it. That's your job today, because your job is to get better. Your job puts food on the table for your family, right? So here's a chance for us all to collectively get a little bit better. And those are the things I kind of take away from some of that stuff. That was a really long answer to a really good question.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are you a reporter? She came with a notepad and everything. You were very awesome. That was a great question. Before we go to the next one, that did bring me to, you talked about the dedication that you saw from Tom Brady. Glenn, could you speak to the dedication that you've seen from Corey Joseph, competition after competition, playing for Team Canada, and what that means to you and the program in general?
Well, it means everything. I mean, I think a team's only as good as its locker room, and we start with a Corey Joseph or a Kelly Olynyk or a Melvin Ejim or the Scrub Brothers. You know, these guys have been there, and to you know, go against the tide, let's say, to say, I'm going to play for my national team, even though it seems like the cool thing not to play for your national team anymore, speaks volumes for his character, and we're just happy to have him as part of our team. But I do have a question for Max. When you're thinking of music, do you have any plays for Nick that you might
sorry? Yeah, in the middle of the set, I go, Boxing One, Boxing One.
Max has got a coaching career, by the way. I'm telling you right now. When I was walking on stage the other day, I was the most nervous I ever been in my life, and he coached me right into it. Well, coached me very well. Let's put it that way.
Awesome. Another question over here.
Hi, my name is Jonas. Just want to ask, what was going through your mind when the final buzzer of Game 6 against the Warriors went off and you guys won the championship?
What was going through my mind? Well, it was kind of a quirky ending, right? Because with 0.9 seconds to go, there was a replay, and I had to figure out whose ball it was and all that stuff. So there was a lot of time, and everybody was up and kind of jumping around, and I grabbed my assistant, Nate Bjork, and I said, Let's sit down and enjoy this here a little bit. It's gonna take a little while, but let's sit down and relax. Only because we did the same thing. We were together when we won a D-League championship in Iowa, now the G-League, and the same thing. The place was going crazy. Everybody was jumping around, and I said, let's sit down and enjoy it. But when it went off, you know, your thoughts go to your family first. I was like, I'm going to go quickly shake Coach Kerr's hand and congratulate him for a great series, and then I'm going to wheel around and try to find my family, and it's pretty wild after that. Everything's pretty wild after that. No feeling like it, though, man. No feeling like it.
Coach, you were able to live that moment, and throughout the course of the season when we had certain Raptors on the podcast, one, Jeremy Lin, said part of his process was visualizing winning, what it feels like. Rowan, for you, somebody who's played for Team Canada, have you started to visualize what it looks like for this current version of the team to have success in China and particularly qualify, if not get a gold medal? Have you started to visualize that?
You know what, I think you always have to be doing that, right? I think you're doing that even as you're trying to put the team together. you're trying to think about what is it going to take for us to win? What do we need to look like for us to win? Not just, you know, which player, but, you know, what attributes do we need? You know, like, we need a toughness, a grittiness. You know, we need guys that can make shots. We need guys that are going to be willing to set the screen and maybe never get a shot. You know, just, you know, mucking it up under the boards to help the team, right? You're thinking about all those things. And, you know, I think that, you know, we were able to win a world championship, our first ever world championship for our country in 2017, you know, with our youth team. And it's a completely different level, obviously. But winning is winning, right? And within it, sacrifice comes in there, right? You know, like, what are you willing to do, you know, for the team? And so, you know, we talked about toughness. That's one thing, you know, that Nick and I talked about, you know, quite a bit early on. And so, you know, yeah, there's a number of things you're looking at for sure, always. And then, yes, there's an exercise, right? There is a visualization, actual exercise that you do as you have your team and you're envisioning standing on the podium, right? I can remember being like 17 years old, 18, playing on the national team. I was first introduced to this, you know? It's like, visualize? Come on, let's get the ball, man. Let's go. Like, visualize? Like, I close my eyes? Like, what? But you wanted to win so badly, and it was your country. And so at some point, you say, you know what? I'm going to do whatever I need to do. Whatever this man tells me to do, I'm going to do it if it's going to help our country, you know? And so you close your eyes, you start thinking about yourself on the podium, you know, getting the gold medal with yourself there and the United States down there, right? You know, you're thinking about all these things. And you know, every now and again, it definitely does come true.
We'll get that question, the next one coming up. I can't see you.
I'm over here, Harrison, on this side over here. Question just down here.
All right, guys. Hey, my name is Jonathan, a longtime basketball fan since I was in elementary school. Question actually for all of you on the panel. So you've all come here today to be able to share your experiences with us, which we greatly appreciate. I'm just curious, what would be your most Canadian experience that made you think, wow, like I'm really proud to be here? And I know there's a Raptors championship that we all have experienced, so you can use that if you can't think of anything else, but preferably something from your own experience. And I know each of you have had something to be able to share with us, hopefully.
Well, you know, for me, you know, obviously I played for Canada for many years, but there's one particular year that really, the Olympics is an amazing thing, obviously, right? When you walk into the stadium and there's 100,000 people screaming and, you know, you're in front of your, you know, your flag's in front of you, that's an amazing feeling, for sure. But I think qualifying for the Olympics, getting there in 1999 as one of the is probably my number one moment, just in terms of feeling Canadian. And I can set the scene for you. We're in Puerto Rico, San Juan, and you know we're going down the street, and you know it's like a Sunday, right? There's nobody's working, right? We've got a motorcade taking us, and people are parking in the street, right, to mess us up, right, to get us off our routine, get us to the gym late, you know. You get out of the bus and they're throwing things, you know what I mean? These guys have shields, and we're like, what is going on? You know what I mean? Like, what is going on? And then, you know, you say, okay, let's just get inside. You get inside, and now it's like a crescendo of boos. You know, Canada, boo. You know, you guys aren't any good. You finally get in the locker room. They're banging on the door. Canada, you lose. You know, it was like, wow, you know? And somehow we went in there, and obviously led by Steve Nash, who was absolutely phenomenal in that game. You know, just led us to victory, you know? And so just being able to kind of overcome a whole nation, right, with basically 20 Canadians was probably one of the greatest moments for me in feeling Canadian.
My turn. So my turn. I came to Canada in 1994 to help start up the Raptors, and long time ago. And it was the first game of the Raptors against the Philadelphia 76ers in 1995, and it happened in November, about 3 days after the Quebec referendum, where you know, Canada barely hung together with less than 1% of the vote. You know, I remember the national anthem, and the Bare Naked Ladies sang the national anthem, and when they switched to the French lyrics in the middle of it, the crowd just erupted. And to feel the passion of all those folks in there, that their country was still together, and how important that was to them. Even though I didn't quite understand what was going on with Quebec, it really meant a lot to me and helped me understand a lot about Canada and appreciate the passion that people have for their country.
Mine are, I got a couple, but first of all, both my sons are born here in Toronto, so they're Canadian passport holders. I'm still going to be coaching the Canadian team in 2040, and they're going to be starting and taking all the shots. Yeah, pretty old by then, but anyway. But I'll share one similar to Glenn's, and I don't know if I've even told people this that much, a couple times, but we had game one of the NBA Finals here, and same, the national anthem came on, and that place erupted. And I'm not kidding you, I was looking down at Kerr and Draymond and those guys, and they were like, what in the hell do we have we gotten ourselves in? I'm not kidding you. It sent them, they knew they had their hands really full. And that wasn't just because of our coaching staff and our players. And turned out they did have their hands full. So thank you. Thank you, everybody.
The Warriors had their hands full, and it turned out into a parade. And getting back to the visualization part of this, Glenn, if Team Canada goes on to, let's say, win a gold medal, visualize for us, where does the parade happen?
Well, we've learned a lot from the last parade. I'll defer to Nick and his staff in terms of how to put together a parade. But no, it was it would be great. I think it would be a tremendous event for us to win, and we probably would have a little bit shorter parade, and
everybody asked me what it was like playing with the Arkells, and I said it was just like the parade except for 5 hours shorter. Same enthusiasm.
The long one.
It was worth it, though, man. Was it good? No, I was more tired after the parade. I was like, get me back to the pressure of the finals.
It was special. Sammy, next question.
Right over here.
Hi there, Nick. My name is David. A question I want to ask you is, who inspired you to be a coach?
It's a really good question. Probably my college coach, I guess. Maybe my high school coach. I wasn't really going to coach. Went to college and was a player, playing at the University of Northern Iowa. I was in the accounting program there, in the business school. And as I got to my senior year, I was like, well, I'm not good enough to play in the NBA. My basketball career is coming to an end, and I'd kind of poured my whole life into it and guts into it, and I was like, I don't really want to walk away from basketball just yet. So I thought I would try to coach. Went and knocked on Coach Eldon Miller's door and said, hey, I don't want to count for anything. I want to be a basketball coach. And he said, yeah, join me as an assistant. And then we were off on a wild path and journey of coaching all over the world. And like I said, here we go, but able to stay employed as a basketball coach all those years. And it wasn't always easy, but here we are.
Actually, I have a question that goes back to the last question. You mentioned how, you know, the OCAN is happening and you're looking down. You can see it in their eyes, like, all right, we're in for it. But you just told the story about going down to Puerto Rico and people banging on your door. Like, I'm always curious, and you've all played in really high-level basketball, like, how much... Because in my mind, the fans make all the difference. But how much does it actually play into it? Or is it a team-by-team situation? Or is it, do you lean on certain guys on the team to calm everybody else down? Like, describe that and how it works. Or is it situational, depending on the team you're on?
I think that, you know, it's always situational, I think. I think that the crowd, you know, for me, just as a Canadian going into that, for me, it was about the strength of our nation, right? Being able to overcome a hostile environment in another nation. That for me was, you know.
And Nash was on the team too.
Nash was the maestro on that team, as he always is. And I think that was kind of what really impacted me, kind of inspired
Settled
me.
Settled everybody coming too.
It was amazing. But, you know, I also think, you know, playing at home, you know, as Nick is sharing, you know, with the wind behind you, with your nation screaming, mm-hmm. I mean, that is, I've played in Canada, you know, with the crowd screaming. You can't feel anything, you know? You're like, you don't feel anything, right? It's like they're carrying you through the game, right? And I'm sure you felt that at times, Nick, right? They just carry you through the game. I don't know exactly how to articulate that, but it's a powerful, powerful thing, you know, when your country's with you and you can feel it all through the
arena. For me, it was weird, right? I was on purpose trying to really insulate myself from everything. I didn't turn my TV on for 2 months, and I don't go online. I wasn't reading it. I just don't want any emotion of somebody telling me how great I am or how crap I am. I just didn't want to deal with that. But I could sense all this craziness going on all over the country, right? And it was like, I really wanted to, like, you know, come early and walk out to Jurassic Park and experience it. But I just kind of let it sit there. But you could sense it, and it was, I don't know, everybody you knew. And I said, like, I know it affected the team we played. But in our job, or my job, when the ball goes up, there's only about two rows I can even comprehend. I don't hear any of the music, anything that's going on. You're so locked into your job, and you have to be. But I tell you, that was a big impact, and it was, man, I couldn't wait to get it over with, because I wanted to get out there and see all over the country, and I've certainly experienced a lot of it since we've won it.
Glenn, can we get Jurassic Parks around the country during FIBA World Cup? Can we make that happen?
That would be good. Awesome. It'll be at 3:30 a.m., though, so it'll...
Perfect. Fit right in.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I think we have time for one more question.
Yep, right here behind the pole.
Hey, this question's for a bit further out. It was mentioned earlier how archaic FIBA's ranking system is. I think we're 23rd. That being said, how foreseeable do you see Canada being a top three, even top two ranked men's program, given how popular the sport is in the country? And what will it take to get there? How far do you envision that being realized? 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, I think the first thing, if you want to see the rankings go up, is you have to win. You know, I think that's just the short, you know, of it. You know, the rankings are not always accurate. I don't believe they're always accurate. There's this antiquated, you know, kind of point system that you work through. However, you know, when you place high at a World Cup and you win, or you place high at Olympics and you're kind of consistently doing it, over time your ranking, you know, will go up. So, you know, one win, you know, of a gold medal doesn't move you up from 23rd to first. You know, it takes time. And, you know, we've seen that in youth ages. We went from number 6 to number 2, right, over time. And so, you know, I believe that hopefully we're now kind of coming into our own. It's taken us some time to build up our system, to build up to have enough players so that if you miss, you know, one or two players here and there, you still have a strong enough team to get out there and compete and be able to perform consistently. And so, you know, as we do that, you know, you'll see our rankings rise.
I think we do have time for one more question. Sam, you got one?
Nick, this question is for you. Gerald is my name. I just want to know, last year, obviously, it was championship or bust for the Raptors. This year, what would your expectations be, and or what would you deem to be a successful season for us?
I mean, I'm getting up out of bed every day thinking about winning it again. I mean, there's several paths to the title, I think, and we took one last year. We're going to have to take a little different one this year. But, you know, the thing that I like to say is we're the first team to win it without a lottery pick on our roster, right? We didn't have to tank for years to get here. There's some other cool stat, but I also believe that, like, the great player, I got to think about this for a minute. The great players, right? The difference between the great ones and the really, really good ones, I think the line's getting thinner all the time, right? And I think, how do you say it? Well, when I was kind of cutting my teeth in coaching, I was following the Bulls in the 90s. You know, it was Jordan. Before that, it was, you know, Magic versus Larry. And there's a couple other guys in there, right? Kobe in the 2000s and Hakeem Olajuwon sprinkled in there for a couple years. And now you sit here and you say, okay, they got AD and LeBron, and then they got Kawhi and Paul George, and they got Dame and CJ. I've already given you six. I just covered like 30 years and gave you five. We got Kyrie and KD. We got Russell and James. We got – I just think
LeBron
that – yeah, yeah, there's all these pairings, and I'm not so sure that team basketball – with really, really good players at each position, isn't about ready to overtake having the one superstar guy that does it all the time. That's what I feel. I love coaching that style. I think we've got, like, really high-end guys at every spot going eight or nine deep. Got to find maybe one or two more, develop some guys. You know, we've already proved we can develop some young guys into bigger roles. And that's what success looks for me like this year.
Earlier on, Rowan, and you guys answered the question about what it means to have fans cheering for you and how that could motivate you going forward in any competition and obviously just in any walk of life. As we speak to the fans around the country through CBC Sports and the fans that are here today, if you had one message to give to the people that are watching as on the heels of playing on Wednesday as Team Canada starts their journey to this FIBA World Cup, what message would you give them? And then I would like for Glenn and then Nick to follow. What message would you give the fans?
Very simple. Believe in and support your country. Okay.
Ditto. Yeah, no, I think that's...
You done? Okay. My thing is this. I think that I know you guys are going to support this team. Right, I tell people all the time that support that is here is unbelievable. I've got a little bit of patience with this team. I'm gonna do, as you guys know, I'm gonna tinker around a little bit. I'm gonna try lots of combinations. I'm not gonna be worried about one bad half or one bad quarter. I'm not gonna be doing cartwheels over one great half or one great quarter. What we are gonna do is get to work every day and learn as much as we can the next day to get a little bit better, throw out the things that aren't working, and get ourselves in peak mental and physical state by the time that ball goes up for the games that are, we're going to treat them like playoff games in China. They're must win, but it'll be a building process till we get there, and we love all your support, man. We need it. We need it.
Support can come from the fans. Support can come from music. Max, you're free. You got some time on your...
Yeah, I'll do the halftime show or whatever.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much it, guys. I want to thank you again for coming out, CBC Sports, for being with us. It's been a great time. Best of luck going forward. You guys enjoy. Thank you to CBC Sports, the Rec Room, for having us here tonight. Any last messages, guys? Great job. That's pretty much it. There's a bunch of stuff out here that you guys can have. Sam, I think you're going to give them the details.